Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. The NFL draft is in the books, and I could not be more thrilled to be joined by the one and only Tony Pauline. He's the consulting editor and NFL draft analyst over at Sportskeeda. In my opinion, he is one of the absolute foremost sports experts and draft experts in the entire world. Many of you may not know, he was my former partner over on the NFL Draft Insiders, and I'm so happy to be talking to him today to break down the Packers draft. Tony, most importantly, how the heck have you been?
I'm okay, Andy, except for the fact I'm a little bit tired, my back hurts, and I have sciatica from basically sitting in the chair that I'm presently sitting in for the past almost 2 months since after the combine and working the phones for pro day workouts and the lead up to the draft. But otherwise, I've been okay, and it's great to be back with you.
Yeah, it's great to be talking to you once again as well. This is obviously a super busy time for you, even right after the draft. So I really appreciate you taking the time to do so. Let's talk about the Packers draft. They had some interesting needs going into the draft. They needed some offensive line depth. They needed some safeties. They needed some linebackers. This was not necessarily the draft to get safeties and linebackers, although Green Bay had attacked it aggressively. This was an offensive line heavy draft that Green Bay did also attack heavily. But I want to start obviously in that first round, specifically with Jordan Morgan. They go get somebody who they seem to plan on playing at tackle. I know a lot of people had him sort of pigeonholed maybe as a guard in the NFL. First of all, your thoughts on Jordan Morgan, and then we can kind of discuss his fit with Green Bay.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting because if you followed me on Sportskeeda and you read my article on Friday, actually, in the lead up to the first round, I had talked about how the Washington Commanders, who had all these picks, I believe they had six picks in the top 100 besides the second selection of the draft, they were going to try and move back up into the late part of round one to draft Jordan Morgan. And I'm told that's exactly what they did. The speculation was they would trade up with Detroit, but then Detroit traded up ahead of Green Bay and took Terry and Arnold. So I don't know if that affected the Packers' plans at all, but I'll tell you this. I've always been a big fan of Jordan Morgan. Before anybody really talked about him, I had a late first-round grade on him. As far as where he's going to play, college left tackle, great footwork, athletic, excellent lateral blocking range, needs to get a little bit stronger. I always thought that he was a left tackle, potentially a zone blocking guard. I think what will happen is it's one of those situations where they may start him inside and then kick him out to left tackle unless they want to try him at left tackle right away. My belief is you always, if you draft a left tackle or a guy you think can play left tackle, you let him play at left tackle until he proves otherwise. But I think with Jordan Morgan, they got a real good player. Guy's got a high upside. He's got to get stronger. He's got to improve his run blocking. But he's a terrific pass protector. And, you know, with Jordan Morgan, Jordan Love, basically seemingly your quarterback of the future, the Packers quarterback of the future, you better be able to protect him. You better be able to give him some targets to throw to. And I think Jordan Morgan goes a long way into protecting Jordan Love.
Yeah, Tony, you're a very wise man because apparently the Packers believe the exact same thing you do because it sounds like they are going to begin him at left tackle. Now, Green Bay cross-trains almost all of their offensive linemen, and we know that one of the things that they value is versatility, and I'm sure he's going to get some time at some other positions as well. But when Matt LaFleur was asked specifically about what position they're going to start him at, they said left tackle. So I think it's going to start with a competition between him and Rashid Walker for that left tackle spot. You mentioned obviously some of that core strength. He previously had the ACL injury in 2022. Had he come out and that ACL injury not happened, where did you kind of have him in that 2022 draft? And then how impressed or how did you view him coming off that ACL where he really kind of came back right away and played the entirety of last season?
I thought if he was not injured in 2022, he enters the 2023 draft, he's probably a second round choice. But I think he really improved as a pass protector, just showed terrific skills off the edge. A pass blocking left tackle is always a priority. It's one of my priorities, or I look for them in the draft. And Morgan was one of the better ones in this year's draft. I will say he's got to get stronger. He's got to improve his run blocking. He wasn't bad at Arizona, but at the Senior Bowl, they lined him up at right tackle often, and he was getting bulldozed. He was getting pushed back into the pocket. But that's very teachable. It's very coachable. It's just a matter of him getting into the weight room and doing what he needs to do.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think that's one of the big takeaways. He's got all these athletic traits. And like you said, he played as a pass protecting left tackle throughout his career. And a lot of his issues that he does need some improvement on are all fixable and coachable at the NFL level, other than maybe the little bit of the shorter arms. Did that play any factor into you when you were sort of scouting him?
It did, but not, it wasn't that bad. I mean, that's why I thought he may be his own blocking guard. Yeah. You got to be careful because he uses his angle so well. He shows such good footwork. The shorter arms may not be an issue. You're just going to have to wait and see. Did I downgrade him because of short arms? I did not.
Gotcha. So let's say it doesn't work at left tackle, or at some point, maybe Rashid Walker just plays amazing and he does need to kick inside to guard. I know you mentioned he could play that. How do you sort of envision, like, what's sort of his comp, or what, you know, how do you sort of see him playing guard in the NFL? This would obviously be a scheme fit for him in a sort of zone blocking scheme. Can he fit everything that Green Bay likes to do? If he did move inside, how do you view him as a guard?
Well, that's basically it. I mean, he's a guy who, he's still good in pass protection. You know, your guards still need to slide their feet and show a decent range on the inside. But if you want him to get out on the second level, you occasionally want to pull him, you know, from the backside and get him out front and block. He can do it. He'll do a terrific job for you. He's got that athleticism. He's got that mobility, and he's shown it for a couple of years now.
Yeah, I think so. There's a couple plays. Obviously, Green Bay loves to run that pin pull, and there's a play on tape where he's at the left tackle and he just gets pulling out wide and one-on-one with a corner. And good luck corners, especially now that they can't go low on offensive tackles anymore. There's a lot of repeatable things on tape from Morgan that Green Bay really likes to do within their offense. I think this is a really good fit from a scheme fit, what Green Bay likes to do. And they've had a lot of success taking players like Jordan Morgan and making them successful. I think this is overall a really good player team scheme fit that, you know, when we get to the end of the draft, we always talk about, Tony, well, who went number one, who went three. But I know you and I always like to look at where did they go and how are they going to fit. This feels like a really good fit for both the player and the team.
And the thing about Morgan is I think he's got a lot of upside. He's just going to get bigger as he physically matures, gets into an NFL weight training program, and just basically just gets stronger and improves the strength of his game.
Yeah, I'm so excited to see what he's going to be able to do in Green Bay. Let's jump to day two. I want to talk about two linebackers first. We'll kind of group these two together. They start the second round by moving down a handful of picks, grabbing a fifth and sixth round pick in the process. They draft Edgerrin Cooper, the linebacker out of Texas A&M. Then at the bottom of the third round, there's a couple other picks sandwiched in there. But at the bottom of the third round, they get Tyron Hopper, the linebacker out of Missouri. We can start with Edgerrin, but you can kind of go in any direction that you want. How did you view these two linebackers?
Well, I mean, James was my number two linebacker after Junior Colson of Michigan, although I believe he went before Junior Colson of Michigan. I mean, he's a very athletic, slightly undersized, but a very athletic linebacker who covers a lot of area, shows the ability to get depth on his pass drops, a fierce pass rusher. I mean, 6'2", 230 pounds. His playing weight was probably closer to 225 pounds. But he was a terrific pass rusher at Texas A&M, just sells out to make plays upfield, can also change direction, get out into space and make plays in pursuit. I think he ran a 4.51 at the combine, and he plays to that speed. So, but he's built more like a weak side 4.3 linebacker, if you will. So it'll be interesting to see how Green Bay uses him. Are they going to put him on the inside? I know they're a little bit different with their linebackers. I think he's got versatility. My only concern about him playing on the inside is how is he going to stack up against the run on Sunday? He was a decent run player against Texas A&M, but all of a sudden, you know, you're playing at 6'2", 230 pounds. It's a different, completely different game on Sunday. As far as Hopper's concerned, Hopper's kind of has a similar build, 6'1.5", 230 pounds. Not as fast for the 40, but he's football fast. He's got great instincts. He's a terrific run and chase linebacker. He's outstanding in pursuit. Shows good depth on his pass drops. I think both of those guys need to improve their ball skills in coverage, but they really weren't asked to do that much against the pass and at their respective schools on Saturday. I like both players. I think Cooper's got a high upside. You know, if they're not starters early into their rookie season, I'm sure they'll be starting relatively soon. or they'll be situational defenders.
Yeah, it certainly feels like Edgerrin Cooper is going to get every opportunity to start alongside Quay Walker, which, to your point from earlier, is a little bit of an interesting pairing because they're both a little bit of that undersized, not necessarily taking on those offensive linemen. Both of them kind of like to go around those offensive linemen. But either way, like you said, against the run is what's going to be interesting. Also with Hopper and Cooper, like perfectly said, where they weren't asked to do a ton of dropping in coverage. It was a lot of blitzing, quarterback spying, and those sort of things. So I'm super intrigued to see how these both of these players do. Did you see either of them? Like, was, did you feel, I know Brian Gutekin said that Hopper was a little bit more of an attacking player as a linebacker in the run game. Did you see anything that they kind of do differently from one another?
Well, I thought Hopper was much better in pursuit against the run, going sideline to sideline, where Cooper was more of your upfield type of guy who was good against the run, but they asked him to blitz a lot at Texas A&M, and he was very successful at it. So why not, you know, keep it going? But again, you know, how much can a 6'2", 230-pound linebacker blitz on Sunday? You can't ask him to do it all the time because he's just going to get the crap beat out of him. I think Hopper, you know, if we were to look at it, I think Hopper is more of your inside type of linebacker that is really good in pursuit, where Cooper is – you know, you better off playing him on the outside, asking him to blitz. He's got the athleticism to cover, just needs to polish his ball skills.
Yeah, I do wonder if we might see a little bit of like some rotations with Hopper and Cooper and Quay and maybe even Isaiah McDuffie. They all bring a little bit of a different skill set to the table. It does feel like Cooper and Quay can be a little bit redundant in some of the stuff that they do, but either way, you get them in the building, you see how they fit, and then you let them compete and see what they can ultimately do well. I want to jump to the safety room. There's three safeties taken in this draft. And again, we talked about maybe it was a strong or weak. It didn't feel like a very strong safety draft. Nope. And we saw safety go really in free agency outside of Xavier McKinney, which the Packers also targeted aggressively. Those safeties didn't get paid. So it's interesting that Green Bay went ultra aggressive at this position, other than the fact that they really needed the depth at this position. They get Javon Bullard in the second round. They get Evan Williams in the fourth round. And then they come back and get Ketan Oladapo in the fifth round. Your thoughts on both of those safeties? Hey, friends. You may not know this because usually you hear me talking about the Packers 365 days a year, but I'm actually a massive, massive fan of the NBA playoffs. And while I've always enjoyed NBA basketball, it's been taken to an entirely different level as I've been utilizing Prize Picks to test my skills and add to that excitement level of the NBA playoffs. Prize Picks is the most fun that I have ever had, winning up to 100 times my money, and there's never been a better time to join the Prize Picks community. Did you know that there's over 5 million members that have already downloaded the app? 5 million! This playoff season, star players are in play in a significant way. Keep an eye out for starred players on the board, and you could receive a 10% payout boost if they're in your winning lineup. This week, I'm going with Brooke Lopez, Paul George, and Jalen Brunson for rebounds, points, and assists, respectively. And I'm already geeking out about putting Caitlin Clark's three-pointers made stat line in my lineup when women's season tips off in just over a month. Basketball plus Prize Picks equals epic excitement. So what are you waiting for? Download the app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. There is nothing quite like the thrill of live NBA playoff basketball this time of year. And if you haven't had the opportunity to catch a playoff game in person, let me just tell you, you are missing out. But you don't need to be. You could attend an NBA playoff game easily with the use of Game Time. Game Time is an authorized ticket marketplace of the NBA, which makes getting playoff tickets even faster and easier. And guess what? Prices actually go down the closer that you get to tip off. With killer last minute deals, all in prices, seat views, and their lowest price guarantee, Game Time takes all the awful, frustrating aspects of purchasing tickets out of the equation, and they help you get the perfect tickets that you want. I'm on my Game Time app right now, scrolling through Bucks tickets for Game 5, and not only are there plenty of great seats available, but the deals are incredible, and I can literally click and purchase any number of amazing deals right now. The best thing about Game Time is definitely the ease of use, no question about it, but their lowest price guarantee and their cancellation protection have come in huge for me in the past and are two more of my favorite features. Let me just say it again. The last minute deals come in clutch every single time. You can save up to 60% by buying last minute tickets for sports, concerts, comedy shows, and so much more. So get in on the action and take the guesswork out of buying NBA tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, PACKADAY, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
Yeah, and don't forget, you know, a lot of the safeties didn't get paid in free agency, but Xavier McKinney got paid. He got paid a real lot because was, if you followed me at Sports Skeeter during the combine, everybody was talking about $13 million a year. He was going to want to get 18, and he got his money. So, you know, it was an interesting the way they went about it and how early they took the safeties. I agree with the Bullard pick. I like Bullard a lot. I think Javon Bullard of Georgia is a natural center fielder. He's got terrific ball skills. He tracks the pass in the air. He works well with his cornerbacks. He's good against the run. So I think from that aspect, he is a perfect complement to Xavier McKinney. Evan Williams, you know, I thought he was taken significantly earlier than he should have been. He's not that big, under 6 foot tall. He's not that fast, runs in the 4.6. He's smart and he's tough. I mean, he was consistently making positive plays at Oregon. He had three good days of practice at the Senior Bowl. He's a guy who doesn't have mental lapses on the field, great instincts, but he's not really super athletic and he's not really big. There's no, except for what's going on between the ears, there's no great physical characteristic to his game, which is why I thought he was much more of a later round pick. As far as Alapato from Oregon State, I mean, he's sort of a tweener. He's, you know, is he a safety? Is he a linebacker? I mean, I know that the Green Bay Packers line up a strong safety with Xavier McKinney, yeah. Although that's sort of a position almost that's being phased out. But I think if you paid McKinney all that money and you come back with Bullard and then you take Evan Williams, who I like as a player, just don't like as an athlete in the fourth round, I think it was just a little bit overkill with Alapato, who I had him late in day three because I just don't know where he's going to play. Is he going to be a linebacker? Is he going to be a strong safety? You know, how are you going to use him on Sunday?
Yeah, it sounds like they plan on using him as a safety. It sounds like Green Bay does plan on using some box safety with Xavier McKinney being a little bit more of a post safety. As far as these three safeties go, sort of hand in hand, Javon Bullard, and then, of course, again, Evan Williams and Ketanji Oladapo. How do you see them? Maybe the differences. It sounds like Javon Bullard is going to be maybe more of a player that can do a little bit of everything and has that great versatility. Sounds like, again, Evan Williams maybe more of like a traditional two-eye safety. It seems like more like Ketanji Oladapo is going to be more of your box safety. Do you sort of see it that way, or like how could these three be used differently?
I think Bullard, like I said, is a free safety who can also play over the slot receiver, and he'll do so effectively. Williams, to me, looks more like a zone guy who really is going to have to play on special teams. Yeah. I don't think you're going to ask him to cover a lot of field because he's not great sideline to sideline. He doesn't have the athleticism. But if you give him an assignment, he's going to stay with the assignment, and he will usually accomplish that assignment. Oladapo is, like you said, I mean, he is a box, up the field, Jamal Adams, if you will, type of safety where the ball skills are okay. Right. You're never going to line him up over the slot receiver. You know, he can run with the tight ends and coverage, but his ball skills need some work. Basically, you know, you're going to use him up the field rather than in reverse. Where Bullard, you can use in reverse, sideline to sideline. And Williams, you're going to use, like I say, in a zone type system where he's covering not a whole lot of area.
I want to ask you one more question about Javon Bullard. There's been some thought with taking the two extra safeties that for some reason, if Xavier McKinney obviously is going to be that your primary safety, and for some reason they feel like Evan Williams or Ketanji Oladapo or maybe Anthony Johnson Jr. from a season ago can win that other safety spot, you've got Keyshawn Nixon as your slot corner right now. And I think some people would maybe like to see somebody challenge Keyshawn Nixon for that spot in a primary role. Do you believe that Javon Bullard has the versatility to play primary slot, or would you just line him up at safety and say, let's not overthink this?
I would line him up at safety. If you're going to line him up over the slot receiver, I think with Bullard, you got to play him in his own type system. You can't really ask him to make too many plays with his back to the ball. If you're, say, playing man-to-man or press coverage over a slot receiver, if there's such a thing with press coverage, but you get my drift. You know, he's got to play backed off the line of scrimmage with the action in front of him. And if that's the way they play either nickel or dime backs, you may want to try him in that aspect.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they utilize all of those defensive backs. All right, I want to ask you kind of just, you can go in any direction that you want. They had a handful of other picks, Marshawn Lloyd being the primary one there, taking him in the third round, the running back out of USC. And then the back end of the draft, Jacob Monk, offensive lineman out of Duke, Travis Glover, the offensive tackle out of Georgia State, Michael Pratt, the quarterback out of Tulane, and Kalen King, the corner out of Penn State. I'll let you go in any direction that you want. What stood out about the remainder of their picks?
Well, we'll go from top to bottom. I mean, Marshawn Lloyd is a terrific back. Some people projected him as a top back in the draft. I didn't, but there was that clump of backs that went starting in late round two through the third round that were not too indistinguishable from another as far as a great perspective is concerned. Marshawn Lloyd was in that clump of running backs. He is a tough runner. He is a hard charging runner. He's an explosive runner. He is an exceptional pass catcher out of the backfield. It's kind of ironic that they used a third round pick on him after signing Josh Jacobs. Yeah. In free agency, I think he'll be a real good situational back who could eventually develop into an every down runner or a feature runner if there is such a thing today, you know these days. Yep. I thought that was a terrific pick. Looking at the offensive lineman, you know, everyone talked about Graham Martin out of Duke, where Jacob Monk was sort of the forgotten man. But Jacob Monk is athletic. He's got terrific size. I think he was announced as a center, although he really hasn't played too much center. I think he can be a real good interior lineman, whether that means center, whether that means guard. He's got an upside. He's got the athleticism. He's got some room for growth. And I think with, like I said, with so much focus on Graham Barton, everyone forgot about Monk. And people were telling me, keep an eye on Monk, keep an eye on Monk. The fact that he went in the fifth round, I think shows that how highly he was thought of within scouting circles when everybody had their focus on Graham Barton. Travis Glover, excuse me, the Georgia State tackle, he's a massive man. I mean, he played a lot of football at Georgia State. I think he started there for 4 years, even played 5 years because he got that extra COVID year. He's big. He's strong. He was a late replacement. I think he came in day two at the Senior Bowl. And you look at him, and he's just impressive because he's so large and he's so strong. In my opinion, strictly a right tackle, best as a run blocker. I think it's a good pick. I think it's a pick where, you know, he's someone who could be used in a backup role on Sunday. Don't think he'll ever really be a starter. Michael Pratt is, you know, he's a nice backup to Jordan Love. He doesn't have the great arm. He's more of a game manager, a game controller, doesn't make a lot of mistakes. Very good short and intermediate passer. Not going to throw the ball downfield too much because he doesn't have a real big arm. Kalen King is an interesting story. I mean, Kalen King came in the season. I was never big on Kalen King. Kalen King came in the season with some people graded as a first rounder. I always had him as a third rounder. But what happened is Kalen King was terrible last season. Yeah. Got hammered by Marvin Harrison Jr. in an Ohio State game. Really did not look good at the Senior Bowl. Then went on and had a terrible combine. I mean, I think it's a roll of it was a terrific roll of the dice for Green Bay with taking Kalen King in the seventh round. If you get him back to where he was in 2022, you may have something there, but it's a seventh round pick. And it, you know, you're drafting the guy based on what he had previously shown prior to the past 12 months, if you will. So it's worth it.
I want to pick your brain, if you can remember back to your Sean Clifford scouting notes from a season ago. They drafted Sean Clifford in the fifth or sixth round a season ago. They get Pratt in the seventh round this year. Just as you kind of compare those two and sort of look at who could potentially win the backup quarterback role long-term for Green Bay, which one do you think would potentially be a little bit better? Just kind of looking at those two from a college standpoint.
Yeah, I had Pratt higher rated because I think Pratt was more protected, did a better job protecting the football, did a better job as a game manager, did a better job. He's probably more accurate. Clifford had a better arm, but Clifford, the ball would be all over the place. So you really didn't know the accuracy or at least the pass placement compared to Pratt. But, you know, if you want to throw the ball downfield, you're going with Clifford. Pratt, like I said, is more of your game manager. Pratt is just an asset to have on the sidelines as an extra pair of eyeballs.
Yeah, very excited to see how that backup quarterback position sort of plays out. They've got, in my opinion, one of the best quarterback coaches in the league in Tom Clements, and we'll see what he can do with both of those young quarterbacks developing them. Obviously, Tom Clements developed Aaron Rodgers. He helped develop Jordan Love, and we'll see what he can do with these two sort of back end of the draft type QBs. Before we get you out of here, a couple of quick ones. Your favorite pick for the Packers from this draft?
I've always been a Jordan Morgan guy. I'm always a believer in a left tackle. You got Jordan Love. You better protect him. You better give him weapons. So I'm going to say Jordan Morgan, but I'm going to say if Jordan Morgan is my 1A, I'm going to give Marshawn Lloyd my 1B because he's so explosive, because he showed such improvement in his game, because he was so terrific, not only at USC last year, he was outstanding at the Senior Bowl. He was outstanding at the Combine. And he's a guy who I believe his game is on the upswing.
Yeah, just to go back before, you obviously mentioned they grabbed Lloyd in the third round right after signing Josh Jacobs. Last year, one of the big issues for Green Bay was when Aaron Jones was out for any period of time, they lacked any explosiveness in the backfield. They lacked any playmaking in the backfield. And the difference between Jones and anyone else on the roster, even though they obviously have a former second round pick in AJ Dillon, was just night and day. And the offense wasn't the same at all. So giving them a little bit of depth there and somebody who has the ability to make some plays and has the ability to take it down the field, I think is going to be something that they really needed. And they certainly got it there on day two of the draft.
He's also, he's also a good pass catcher out of the backfield. I think he only had 13 receptions last year at USC. I may need to be corrected on that. But he's shown the ability that when the ball is thrown to him, he catches the ball very well. I know he caught the ball well at Pro Day. Take from that what you will. It's in shorts and a T-shirt. But he also caught the ball relatively well at the Senior Bowl. So that's, I think, a hidden talent of Marshawn Lloyd that people have dismissed are not really counting on because he caught so few passes at USC last year.
Yeah, I think from a Packers standpoint, a lot of people kind of learned that lesson with AJ Dillon. Nobody's confusing AJ Dillon for Marshall Faulk by any means, but a lot of people are like, this guy can't catch the ball at all because he never got asked to do it at Boston College. He came in, he had pretty good hands coming out of BC. They just never asked him to do it. So I think a lot of people, just because they didn't do it, have now kind of realized doesn't mean they can't do it. And that's something that I think is going to be super beneficial for him. I know he had 8 fumbles. I know he also struggled a little bit in pass protection. My assumption, those things are going to have to get cleaned up if he wants to see the field in Green Bay with Jordan Love. Did you have any concern of the fumbles or the pass pro for Lloyd?
No, I mean, the thing is he's got kind of he's not that tall. He's not super fast, although he didn't show great speed, but the fumbles and the pass protection, I think that can be easily cleaned up.
Yeah, I think so too. We talked about your favorite picks. As you look through this draft board, I know you kind of mentioned Evan Williams a little bit, but your biggest reach for Green Bay in this draft, or maybe the most disappointing aspect of this draft?
Well, I think if there was a reach, it would be Evan Williams in the fourth round, because not only I, but most teams had him as a seventh round free agent type. And I go back to the fact that they put all that money into Xavier McKinney. They take Javon Bullard early, and then they come back with, two safeties in Williams, who's a good football player, but not a great athlete, and Olopato, who, is sort of a tweener. To me, after giving Xavier McKinney all that amount of money, I think maybe that fifth round pick could have been used better.
Yeah, the amount of resources that they put into safety, obviously, when, again, a lot of teams did not seem to value that position. That's one thing for me that's a little bit of a question mark going into this offseason is, you only have a finite amount of resources, especially when it comes to giving out big contracts and draft picks. And they used a massive contract and 3 draft picks on a safety position. Just an interesting use of those. Not to say it's necessarily good, bad, or ugly, but I'm going to kind of be monitoring that as time goes on to see, did they maybe use a little bit too many resources on that position? All right, late pick to kind of keep an eye on that you think maybe could develop into something down the road.
Well, I think Jacob Monk, like I said, because people really didn't pay too much attention to him. He's athletic. He's strong. He's got a good amount of upside. So I think that is a guy who, maybe by the end of his rookie year, maybe by year two, depending on how the rest of the line shakes out, I would see him either playing with the first team or vying for playing time with the first team. And then, like I said, Kalen King, I mean, you never know. Oftentimes with cornerbacks, I find, whether it be the Eli Apples, Bradley Robies, those types of guys, Darryl Stingley, the kid that Houston drafted in the first round a couple of years ago. It's very tough to get them to revert back to where they were at the top of their game. The guys I just mentioned, when they came in, their game was on the downslide, as is King. But if they find a way to get him back to where he was in 2022, you got a keeper on your hands.
Yeah,
that's and I should also say, I mean, you know, listen, Rashid Walker, Ohio State guy, was a seventh round pick. So maybe they go back to the well and lightning strikes twice for the Packers.
Yeah, just last year too, Carrington Valentine, a seventh round corner that had fallen in the draft a little bit that they pick up. He ended up being a starter for them a season ago. Goody just this weekend said how high they are on him and think he had a fantastic season last year. So they're trying to hit the lightning twice in back-to-back seasons with a seventh round corner. We'll see if it plays out for them. Overall, I saw your grades over on SportsKita. I won't spoil any of the winners or losers on there. Everyone make sure to go check it out over at SportsKita.com. But I noticed that Green Bay was not on your winners. They weren't on your losers. So I'm assuming they're somewhere in that meaty part of the curve, which seems to be the overarching thought. Not bad, not great, not sexy, but good.
Yeah, I think they filled their needs with good players. I just thought that maybe a couple more weapons, but the teams that I had on my winners board, Chicago, the Chiefs, the Ravens, I mean, they hit it out of the park with the Chiefs and the Ravens. You know, that's why those teams are consistently competing for the title or winning the title each year. The Bears, a division rival for you guys. We'll see. It's all going to rely on the quarterback and be on Caleb Williams' shoulders. But on paper, anyway, and we're only talking and grading this on paper, it looks pretty good for the Bears.
I can't remember the last time I got to the end of a draft and said and didn't say, oh my goodness, the Ravens had an amazing draft again. It's just year after year after year after year that they consistently do it, despite constantly, at least usually, picking towards the back third or even like back 5-10 picks of that of the draft. But they crush it every single year. Last but not least, before I get you out of here, you mentioned the Bears, you mentioned the Vikings. I've talked all offseason about this potentially being a division-altering draft in the NFC North. You clearly have two big-time quarterbacks in J.J. McCarthy and Caleb Williams going into the division, which one way or the other, if they're extremely successful or if they fail, is going to change this division in some significant way. What did you think of those two picks, and how does the division kind of change moving forward?
Well, I mean, Caleb Williams was sort of a no-brainer. I don't think he knew it when the college season began, because Drake May was right there with Caleb Williams. But as the season progressed all along, you knew Caleb Williams was going to be the first pick of the draft. I think there's some risk there. There's absolutely some risk there. He's an arm thrower. The fundamentals and the technical aspects of his passing need to be improved. They talk about the off platform throws, but that's what he did most of the time. Yeah. He's got to learn to play from the pocket. He's got to learn to run the offense from the huddle, which he never did. But I mean, he's a dynamic personality on the field and off the field, and he's a real leader. And leader would be the best way to describe J.J. McCarthy, because that's what he was at Michigan. People complain, and I think understandably so, criticize him because he didn't throw the ball that much at Michigan. Well, they didn't need to even throw the ball that much. They had such a great offensive line, most of who were either selected in the draft, or I think the one guy was Barston was signed as an undrafted free agent afterwards, and they were able just to pound the opposing teams. But the fact is, J.J. McCarthy won a lot of games, won a national title, beat Ohio State 3 years in a row, and that's a tough thing to do. I thought that J.J. McCarthy was going to be overdrafted. I believe he was like number 27 or 28 on my overall board. But we know that quarterbacks are overdrafted. J.J. McCarthy's got it going on. When you look at him from a leadership point of view, a moxie point of view, confidence point of view, you could say he's the top player at the position with those intangibles, which is why teams love them during the interview process. But I think you're going to have to ease him in. He's going to need some time. You're going to have to protect him. And, you're going to have to develop that arm strength, or at least get him to throw. Just a quick conversation I had with somebody. I was always down on McCarthy's arm strength, and I talked with somebody in the league, and they said, you know what? He occasionally makes the deep throws and shows a lot of arm strength, so you know he's got it. He's just got to get comfortable with it. He's got to get confident with it, and you have to have him do it on an every down basis. If the Vikings are able to do that, I mean, they could potentially have a real good quarterback, starting quarterback on their hands.
And as much as it pains me to say this as a Packers fan, when you get to Minnesota, you get Aaron Jones at running back. You get two big time weapons in Addison and Justin Jefferson. You have a pretty good offensive line, especially on the offensive tackles with O'Neal and Darisaw. And then you've got kind of two quarterback whispers there too, in Kevin O'Connell, as well as picking up Josh McCown in the offseason. I think of all the quarterbacks, that's not too shabby of a place to go to.
And don't forget, I mean, they probably got the best defensive player in this draft with Dallas Turner when they moved up. So, you know, they basically have, it looks like, not only their potential starting quarterback, but their replacement for Daniel Hunter.
Yeah, very much so. And obviously they go and get Grenard in free agency as well. It's going to be an interesting division. I can't wait to see how things turn out. Tony, this was amazing. I appreciate you doing this second season in a row, breaking down the Packers draft. Tell everyone about Sportskeeda, your role in everything that they can find over there right now, or anything that you're working on.
Well, my role was jack of all trades, and I competed in the, I competed for the Olympics for the decathlon, and that's kind of what it is in Sportskeeda. But basically at heart, I do, as for years now, decades, primarily all the draft stuff, all the scouting reports. We have one of the best mock draft simulators out there, which was good 2 weeks ago. Now we got to fill it up and load it up with the 2025 guys. You know, hopefully good things moving forward.
Yeah, you can find him on Twitter at Tony Pauline. You can find him, of course, again at Sportskeeda. As I mentioned at the beginning, in my opinion, he's one of the foremost experts on NFL draft in the entire world. Always appreciate getting to chat with him. And again, Tony, thanks for taking the time in a very busy time of the year. Make sure to give him a follow. Of course, you can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That does it for us. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.